Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 456th episode of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at onceametro.com and the rest of the SB Nation family of soccer websites. Come on in. The chat room is open. Talk amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability. Currently, this is the fifth week that the coronavirus has forced Major League Soccer to suspend the season. And once again, here at the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, I implore all of you to remain vigilant, to stay safe. If you don't need to do anything at all, please stay home with your loved ones. Do not get infected by this coronavirus, this terrible thing, this terrible situation that we have been unfortunately going through, all of us around the country, and of course our neighbors in the north in Canada, our neighbors in the south in Mexico, and all over the world. So once again, please remain vigilant. Please remain strong. Do not go crazy. Do not lose your head. We will get through this. It will happen. You know, this is a situation where we all need to come together and just have a conversation. Call your neighbors. I know you want to see your loved ones. I know you want to see your parents, your grandparents, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, your best friends, you know, your besties, colleagues. You just want to have issues going through all of this, as once again, we are trying to remain vigilant through this coronavirus situation. So that's all I ask from all of you. Just remain vigilant. Remain calm. Everything will be okay. It's tough to see those people, whether you know them or not, whether you're related to them or not, to go through these motions and unfortunately losing people due to this virus, this horrible thing. I'm doing my best to make sure that A, I remain vigilant, and B, that I don't I can't be as overly social as I like to be. You know, I like to be talking to people and everything. I like to find ways to make everything, you know, make people laugh. So it has been a very difficult time, of course. But, you know, all I can say is that it's a situation where we just have to remain vigilant. We have to remain vigilant. That's all I am saying. That's all we got to do. And once that is gone and over with, then we can get through this. Some good news I'd like to pass along, of course, is that sideline reporter on Fox Sports South and Fox Sports Southeast, Jillian Sinkovits, she has already announced on Twitter that she is no longer troubled by the coronavirus. Good for her. Very happy for her. And, you know, she's remaining vigilant. She's staying self-quarantined. Jillian, of course, very happy to hear that you are no longer contagious with the coronavirus. Very happy for you. And please remain strong and please remain vigilant. And obviously, it's a situation where all of us, we need to continue to remain vigilant and strong through these difficult times. You know, obviously, a lot going on, here. And, you know, when you're talking about these reports coming through about the coronavirus, apparently some numbers have been very positive. The amount of cases that are being documented as new cases, apparently that curve is going down. Of course, listening here in the New York City, New Jersey area here in the Northeast, you know, we have Andrew Cuomo, governor of the state of New York, who has already said that the curve is going down. It's improving. And, you know, I'm also happy and thrilled that everyone is making sure that they limit their contact during this troubling time. These times are very troublesome, of course, with the coronavirus. And as they're saying right now, if you're listening to what President Trump is saying, and I'm only going by the news, I'm only going by what they're saying with that, you know, he's hoping that this situation is getting better. Of course, some are saying he's not saying it, but look, it is the job of the President of the United States to try and give news, and it doesn't matter what party lines he is on. It doesn't matter to me if he's a Republican. It doesn't matter to me if he's a Democrat. The President of the United States is trying his best to keep a positive hope that an antidote, a cure, can be found. And that is what we need to do here, folks. This is the things that we need to do. Remain vigilant. Remain aware. Remain careful. But if there is hope, and I know many are saying it's going to take a full year to find a cure, to find an antidote for this coronavirus, and then, you know, pass it along, spread it around. Maybe, just maybe, if it's created early enough, maybe if they do find in these tests that a cure and or an antidote has been found, then for goodness sakes, let's make sure that we have it. Maybe we can get ahead of schedule. Why not? Why not? Don't we want to get back to our ways of life here? Don't we want to get back to what we want to do? Have a normal life? To stop seeing the shelves being empty. No more toilet papers on the shelves. No more paper towels. No more of this. No more of that. Empty shelves in our supermarkets. Folks, we need, and I repeat, we need to get back to normal as fast as possible. If it is there. That's all I'm saying. We cannot continue to live in chaos. We cannot continue to live in, you know, fighting amongst ourselves. Can't. And talk about the people who sacrificed their lives, like the doctors and the nurses and the ambulance drivers and, you know, everyone trying to help people in the hospitals. And let's not forget those that are working in the supermarkets, that they have to deal with people every single day to try and battle a 6-foot separation law. It's not really a law, but, you know, that's what needs to be done to keep yourself healthy and everything, you know. And of course, there's plexiglasses now trying to stop the breathing on each other and everything. But we have to remain vigilant here. We have to remain vigilant. We have to remain strong. We have to remain strong to make sure, to make damn sure that this entire situation is completely gone. That's all we're saying here. I'm not trying to politicize anything. I want this damn coronavirus to be over with. just like you want this damn coronavirus to be over with. I want to get back to the game. I want to get back to the press box at Red Bull Arena. I want to get back to my travel plans covering the Red Bulls on the road in Washington, D.C., in Orlando, Florida, in Miami, Florida, Fort Lauderdale as well, going to Atlanta, going to Philadelphia, you know, going to the Bronx, going to Foxborough. I want to have my travel plans back so I can do my job. It's not just doing this show for you. It's not just covering the game in this country. I want the game back. I want this game back, just like all of you do. Great job by Major League Soccer to post through Twitter, Facebook, also by Fox Sports and ESPN to broadcast past games in the 25-year history of this league. The first game today, San Jose Clash, which are now the Earthquakes, hosting DC United at Spartan Stadium, where Eric Winalda scored the first league goal in the history of Major League Soccer. I had that man on this show 5 weeks, a month and a half ago almost, as I interviewed him to talk about that game, to talk about himself, to talk about how he wants to be a pioneer, not just so happy he could play in MLS, but to help bring MLS into what it is. You know, being a player from the United States in a brand new league, this league that has surpassed the North American Soccer League as a first division league. This is the situation that we all need to understand. If not for those people who have played in this league, if not for the men with the visionary like Alan I. Rothenberg was for the U.S. Soccer Federation, Major League Soccer would not be coming to fruition. It had to take a World Cup to come to our shores in 1994. A World Cup that was successful, that saw our men's national team get out of the group stage and go into the second round, sadly losing to Brazil will always be Brazil no matter what. And sadly, it had to take a very violent elbow swing into the head of Tabo Ramos that cracked his skull open and got him out of the game. Because why? Because they had enough of this young player who was dancing with them and against them, that it had to take something like that to knock him out of that second round game. Because maybe, if Tabo Ramos doesn't get that injury, maybe the United States would have gone into the quarterfinals in 1994. Maybe Brazil doesn't go and win that World Cup. But we don't know. A lot of what ifs, we're not sure. But one thing I am sure about is this. I am sure that I'm happy that we have a first division league in Major League Soccer that has been around for 25 full years. There have been ups, there have been downs. There have been some fantastic moments, there have been some sad moments. More moments to come. But for now, it is a wonderful thing and a wonderful time to celebrate 25 years of Major League Soccer. May the coronavirus be damned. We can still celebrate 25 years of this first division league, and we will still be able to do so here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Because why? Because I care about this game in this country. More needs to be done, but until then, we can celebrate the fruits of our labor. We can celebrate the wonderful players that started this league, made it what it is today, and I'm telling you right now, I am very excited very happy that we are celebrating 25 years with some of the greatest players that have worn not just a club shirt representing this league, but representing, of course, the national team jerseys of the United States of America. I am very happy about this. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a great guest for you tonight here on the 40s Fire American Soccer Show. A member of that 1994 World Cup team for our United States men's national team. He is also a former player of the Colorado Rapids. He is currently an analyst, not just for the Colorado Rapids on Altitude, but as well as the many platforms of Univision Spanish language. I am very thrilled to have on Marcelo Balboa on tonight. Marcelo, good evening, welcome, and how are you, sir?
I am great, fellas. How are you guys doing?
We're all doing great. We're all doing great.
Good.
First things first, how is your family doing throughout this entire coronavirus situation?
You know, I'm knocking on wood right now in my head. So, you know what? I've been lucky. Mom and dad are locked up in California. They only go out to my dad. My mom only goes out to the grocery store. They're healthy. My two kids, since they closed University of Colorado, they're both at home doing online classes. We got my youngest one out of the dorms, and he's safe and sound. So I'm locked up in my house. I only go out in the mornings for my long walk or my bike ride. So far, I mean, I've been blessed. No one in my family has gotten anything. So how about you guys? You guys all safe and sound?
We're all safe and sound. My wife and I, we've been very, very lucky, very fortunate, due diligence and everything. She's working from home. I'm, of course, locked up in the bunker. So we have our food, our water, our toilet paper, and anything else that everyone else is hoarding. So we're good to go. you know, talking about this game here, Marcelo, I mean, obviously, you've watched a lot of soccer when you were a kid. Of course, the original North American Soccer League was going on back in the day in the late 60s, 70s, and even probably into the early 80s. For you, what was it like to follow and watch these clubs going after each other, even though the majority of them were probably mostly Europeans or South Americans and very few Americans were able to, you know, play the game, even though it did start some form of a revolution that Americans wanted to be a part of this?
Well, you got to remember, we used to watch Soccer Made in Germany on Sundays. That was like it, because there wasn't much soccer on TV. We were lucky enough that we were with the LA Aztecs. We were ball boys, so we got to see quite a few of their games. So, you know, shaky grounds back then, you know what I mean? It started off great, and little by little it deteriorated. My dad played in 1965, 66, and I believe 67 or 66, 67 for the Chicago Mustangs. And it was the second tier. You know, it was a second tier before the NASL really took off. So, God, to watch soccer grow in the last 20 years, let's just say since 1990, we'll go 25 years, 19, what are we in? Yeah, really, because it took off in 90. People kind of knew it. 94, it really took off. And then once MLS really hit, then soccer just kind of blew up again in the U.S. So it's like anything else, man. It's been a bumpy ride. The fact that we're still now talking finally 25 years of MLS, a league that's stable, a league that's flourishing, more teams, more stadiums, bigger investments in soccer. So I got to be honest, I don't think a lot of us would have thought in 96 that we'd be talking 25 years later and even going stronger and people still looking to buy $300 million franchises to be in MLS.
I mean, that's amazing the amount of money that's been put down these days now. Obviously, Austin's coming, St. Louis, Charlotte, Sacramento, of course, coming up from the United Soccer League's Championship League. We've had clubs that, you know, proved their worth in an Open Cup run, like FC Cincinnati, Minnesota.
Yep.
You know, they've lost teams, but they've never had separation. I mean, you're seeing amazing moments that, you know, proves that, you know, MLS has stood the test of time.
You know, we still got a long way to go, because when we talk about leagues in South America and in Europe that are 75, 100 years. So the important thing is a good, strong foundation, because, you know, like anything else, if you have a crappy foundation, eventually your house will fall apart and it'll break. I think the foundation of MLS is solid. My only concern, I think everybody's concern, is too many teams too quick within the next 3 or 4 years and competition will drop. Where do you find those kind of players? But listen, the owners that are coming in want to spend money. They want to win right away. And they're investing in new stadiums. So, listen, soccer, I think soccer, MLS is here for a long time. I don't see it going anywhere. I think it's just going to get stronger and stronger. But again, now we've got to be careful, because after we reach 32 teams, which I think we have already, you know, they talked about that's it, 32 teams. So now you're losing that franchise fee that people are paying $300 million to get this, to get that. So I think that in 2022, it's going to be a big year because of TV rights. Do you move some of the games from regional TV to more national TV? So I think there's still a long way to go, but it's definitely moving steadily in the right direction. Hello?
Let's go back to 1994. Obviously, you know, you had that big draw against Switzerland at the Pontiac Silverdome outside of Detroit.
Yeah.
The huge win over Colombia in the second match. And, of course, sadly, you lose the third group stage match. But you move on to the second round. Talk about having that feeling of going as the home nation in this World Cup, and to seeing it filled with American fans from the first row in the lower level all the way to the last row in the upper deck. I mean, what did that feel for you in the opening match at Pontiac at the old Silverdome when you saw a full crowd on American soil, no doubt?
You know, it was interesting, because I'm not sure how many people really knew much about soccer. I think everybody wanted to see what this event was about. What's the World Cup? The World Cup is the biggest sporting event in the world. We got to see this. Let's go take a look and see what it's all about. And that curiosity turned a lot of people into fans, because we would have never thought we were going to sell out Detroit. We never thought we would have sold out Pasadena twice or Stanford. You know what I mean? So I think, like anything else, I think to this day, it's probably one of the most attended World Cups in history, because at that time, soccer wasn't big here. So people wanted to see what this big event was. All of a sudden, they saw a U.S. team, which a lot of people didn't know who we were, let's be honest. All of a sudden, they get a result against Switzerland with a fantastic goal from Eric Winaldo. People are like, holy crap, what the hell's going on? And then now, everybody knew Colombia. Everybody knew Vive Valderrama. You know what I mean? So it was for all of us, I think it was nerve-wracking, too. Because now you have to one thing was performing in 90 away from home. No one really had any expectation of us. It's the Americans finally qualified after 40 years. Let's see what they can do, you know, kind of mentality. Now we had 4 years from there to prepare for this. Now expectations where we need to get out of the group. It's not we want to get out of the group. We need to get out of the group. And you felt that little bit of pressure, but it made it easier when you walk out and all of a sudden you're like, holy crud, there's 75,000 Americans compared to the 15 or 20 Colombian. You know, I mean, it was pretty significant how lopsided it was for us. So it was a little nerve-wracking playing in front of a big crowd because everybody was expecting and wanting to see what the American team could do. So, but God, to walk out and to hear that roar and that cheer, especially in Detroit, where it was the first game ever played in a dome stadium. It was real grass that was watered the night before, that it was so humid that the water didn't evaporate. So we had to wear studs. I mean, I'm talking the studs, the pointy studs to play on. It was almost like a rainy day because the field was that squishy that we had to wear studs. And it was surreal.
I bet it was. And of course, you know, getting that point was huge. Even though you were the home side and Eric scores that great goal that bends it just underneath the crossbar in the upper far 90. You know, I want to go and fast forward to that second round match against Brazil. And I want your opinion about this because, you know, I don't know if anyone's really analyzed it as much as, you know, the experts have. But, you know, there's a video on YouTube based on your former national team teammates and Tony Meola, Tab Ramos, John Harkes. They're from, of course, Kearney, New Jersey, called Soccer
yeah,
Town USA. It's on
yep,
YouTube.
I saw it.
You saw. So, seeing because I missed the game. Well, I saw a little bit of the game because I just got started getting back into the game with that 94 World Cup. I was down in Orlando at the time working in Disney World on a summer program, but I missed the second round game, unfortunately. But I saw the swing on Tab Ramos. If you don't mind me asking you this question, let's say that Tab does not get the elbow directly to the head. Let's just say Tab does not sub out because of the injury.
Yeah.
Because of the way he frustrated the Brazilians – did you think that because of him, if he was not injured, maybe on that day there was going to be an upset special?
Listen, I think that if Tab doesn't get hurt, I think we have a better chance of getting the result we wanted. Tab was a guy that was very skillful, that was able to hold the ball in the midfield for us. And remember, we were already missing John Harkes because of the yellow card against Romania. So Harkes wasn't in this game. It definitely would have pushed our percentage a little higher. Because we, if you remember that game, we started off okay. We started off pretty well. Talking, because I've done a few events with Bebeto. Bebeto was telling me that they were not nervous for a lot of games. For some reason, they were nervous to play us on our Independence Day on a team they didn't know very well because no one's really seen us play. They knew that we were going to fight and scratch and kick and run for 90 minutes, something that most teams are pretty, you know, they're very technical. We were a very strong, powerful team that just went after teams. So, listen, first of all, it was a cheap shot, what Leonardo did. It was unfortunate that it hit Tab where it did, and did it drop our chances? Yeah, they took out our best player. They took out our best. That's like one of us going after Romario or Bebeto and taking that one out of the game. Now, all of a sudden, it's a little different when it's only to have to mark Romario, not Bebeto, or have to mark Bebeto, not Romario. So they took out our best player, and we struggled from there. We defended. They hit the crossbar. They hit the pole. They did everything but put the ball in the back of the net. And then again, listen, against a team like that, in a big game like that, all it takes is one error. And we made it. We lost the ball in the midfield. Thomas Dooley gets caught chasing from behind. I have to step to put a little bit of pressure on Romario and force him to the outside. Lexi gets caught just too far away from Bebeto because Bebeto pulls himself away. from Lexi. Romario plays in a nice ball. And one mistake cost us the result. But with Tab in the game, you can't say we were going to win against Brazil, but our percentage would have gone up much more because of the fact that Tab was probably the best player we had on the ball.
I agree with you there. At that time, he was definitely the best attacking player, creative player that you and, everyone, including Bor Milutinović, had at that time.
Yep.
1996, Major League Soccer is born, and you were playing for the Colorado Rapids. What was it like for you to play in Denver? Mile High Stadium, of course, then Invesco Field at Mile High, and we'll get to Dick's Sporting Goods Park in a moment. But you know, how was it for you to go from a World Cup team to now a club side in the United States, and at the same time, for the first time ever, you're playing against your former national team teammates?
I got lucky enough that I already played for the Colorado Foxes. I've already played in Denver for a little bit of time. I played there in 92, 93 for the Foxes. So I kind of knew Colorado and what was it about. The decision was, it was really more, did I want to leave Mexico? Because I was playing in Mexico for León and I was having some success with León. And the decision was, do I want to come back? And it changed. Everything for me changed when Sunil Gulati came to Mexico to talk to me about coming back to Major League Soccer. He had a wild card in his back pocket. He had Phil Anschutz, the owner of a lot of teams, but he was going to be the owner of the Colorado Rapids. And he put Anschutz on the phone, and Anschutz told me a few things. And the thing he left it with, he goes, in order for me to have a team, I told Sunil in Colorado, the only way I was going to do that, if I had the guy who did that overhead kick in the World Cup on my team in Colorado. So when Phil Anschutz said that, and at that time, since we didn't have these smartphones and we still had, I think, dial-up back then on the computers, I never knew who Phil Anschutz was until he called me. And when an owner goes out of his way to call you and tells you that story, it made it very easy for me to leave Liga MX and come to play in Colorado. Now, I missed the first game. I missed the first game in Kansas City, which we lost. So I made it back just in time, literally 2 days. I believe it was 2 days before the opening game at Invesco Field or Mile High Stadium, old Mile High Stadium, before we played Dallas. So it was just a special day, you know what I mean, to finally be able to walk into a locker room and see your jersey with your name on it. It's official. Major League Soccer is here in Colorado. To walk out and warm up and you see about 15,000 by the time we go back in, put on our jerseys, we all line up and we walk out of the festivities. Now you walk out and there's 22,000 people there cheering you on, waiting to see what soccer is all about in Denver. Because we had the Caribou before that. We had the Colorado Foxes. So, and interesting enough, playing against my first game is playing against my old teammates because I played with Mark Dodd. I played, David Durr was my coach here with the Colorado Foxes. Chad Ashton was one of the players here. Mark Santel was one of the players here. So it was kind of surreal. Now all of a sudden you're playing against your former national team players, but you're also playing against guys you played with in the amateur leagues here. So just a special day to finally say that Major League Soccer kicked off and that people showed up and accepted soccer in Denver.
So I have to ask you this. Obviously, you're a defender. You know, you've defended well. You know, you probably, if I talk to someone from Denver that's a Rapids supporter, that, Marcelo Balboa back in the day was such a great backliner. You know, you couldn't get anything past him. But the one thing that many people know you for is the bicycle kick goal that you scored in Columbus at the Crew. Can you just talk about that moment? Because, you know, ESPN, Taylor Twellman's show, Bantering with Taylor Twellman, John Champion, top five goals, has that goal that you scored against the Crew on the bike. Talk about that shot.
Wow. What position am I in? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We'll look it up later. You know what?
We'll close it up later.
Here's the deal. I told this story today a little bit. No one really knew. I got a concussion the beginning of that game. So,
oh gee.
I remember getting cracked in the back of the head. Let me take that back. That's about all I remember from that game. Everything else that I'm telling you, it's because I've talked to the trainer, I've talked to the doctors, and they're the ones that filled in the gaps. I got knocked out. The trainer came onto the field. Supposedly, he asked me 3 questions. I got all 3 questions wrong. He took me to the side of the field, and I'm going to guess it was something like, what's the score, and probably stuff like that. But I got all 3 wrong. So he walks me over to the side of the field, and he says, I think you're done. Supposedly, he says to me that I told him that if you take me off the field, I'll freaking kill you. I told him, I'm not going to the bench. So he's like, fine. He goes, at that time, there was no concussion protocol. You could, whatever, as long as you were able to walk, you were able to go back in. So I went back into the game. He's like, we'll keep an eye on you. Supposedly things were fine, no problem, whatever. I score the bicycle kick, yabba dabba doo, the best goal of my life. And at the end of the game, we're all going to the locker room. And to this day, I couldn't even tell you if we won that game or not. I don't remember. So we go into the locker room, and the doctor says, because the doctor told me later on, he's like, oh, man, that's a great goal, man. And I'm like, what goal? So they kept me up. I was in the training room. They kept me up most of the night. I finally go back to my room. And my roommate was Ross Pauly. Ross Pauly was like, hey, man, your goal was number one on ESPN, on ESPN's top 10. I'm like, what goal? And he's like, this one. So I turn and watch the TV, and there's my bicycle kick. So that's my story to the best goal I've ever scored. I had a concussion. More than likely, I saw 3 of balls coming at me. I probably decided to kick the one in the middle. And I scored the best goal in my career. So, that's if we were nowadays, Taylor Twellman would kill me because you should have been off the field to the concussion protocol. So, but that's back then we could play through anything and played. I believe I played the next week too with the concussion. So it is what it is. But yeah, I scored my best goal with the concussion and don't even remember that game.
Wow, that's amazing.
You
know, obviously, what was it like for you to see Dick's Sporting Goods Park being constructed? Well, not even constructed, groundbreaking construction, and now it's been there for how long? Like what? Maybe a little over 10 plus years, I would have to say. Because
I think it was open
the
in
best
2007,
thing,
right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 2007, so it's over 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, the best feature is the locker room that is I don't know if that's the northern end or the eastern or western end of
the
stadium.
The north end.
Thank you. The north end, and seeing both teams, their starting 11s walking down those stairs and heading onto the pitch. To me, that's like the most fun and majestic feeling. To me, that's American soccer's version of 8 men out. Or not 8 men out, you know, if you build it, they will come. To me, that is an amazing thing.
I don't know. You get mixed reviews. Some people like Chicago, where not the location, but the way the stadium is, where both teams come right by the locker room. They come right out of midfield. So everybody's got to have their uniqueness of their stadium. You know, there's no other team that has to walk downstairs and come right through the where the fans used to be onto the field, walk to the middle. So it's definitely different and special. So I think the when you look at that stadium, the surrounding, this you can see the mountains, you can see so much from that place that the scenery is spectacular. So, you know, like I said, I think every stadium has its allure. You know, look at LAFC, the way they walk through the restaurant, you know, Sporting Kansas City. So I think it's kind of cool that when you see these two teams meet, they walk and they meet right at the staircase and they walk down. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, it's got a lot of cool features. You know what I mean? Just different. Every stadium's got to have that little bit of uniqueness that somebody else doesn't have.
And ever since you've retired from the game, you've been a broadcaster. You've done some work with ESPN at first. I know you were the analyst for the 2006 World Cup when the United States, when the World Cup was in Germany. You were part of the brand new, that HD net, the high definition net sports. You were with Glenn Davis calling MLS matches. You are the analyst with Richard Fleming with Altitude. Of course, that's the regional sports network in Denver, no longer Fox Sports Mountain West, I think it was, or Rocky Mountain it was called. And also because I marvel at you because not only are you good, you know, analyzing in English, but, you know, I feel lucky to see you whenever you come to Red Bull Arena, whenever you're doing, whether it be Univision, Unimas, Univision Deportes, now TUDN, that you're able to analyze the game, not just, you know, English for the Rapids, but in Spanish for the nationally televised audience. I mean, look, I'm amazed that you're able to do it in such clear pronunciations. It's unbelievable what you're able to do.
I am too. You know what it is I think I fit this new demographic of Spinglish, because some of the words don't come to me and I'm overthinking it. So I get like 10 words in Spanish and I throw one English word in there because I don't remember the word, how to pronounce it in Spanish. So I love what I do, and I try very hard. I get abused sometimes because when I started, I was calling them Herrera instead of Herreras. I was pronouncing the H and not the H. So I've learned a lot, and I enjoy it. I've had to study a lot because, again, everything I do is in English. So the Spanish progressively gotten better. But, man, do I enjoy my job. And I love broadcasting in English and in Spanish. And the difference is, in Spanish, you have a little bit more freedom. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you're doing national TV, you have a little bit more freedom to speak on both teams and how fairly they're doing. When you do regional, sometimes, you know, like anything else, you've got to back off the pedal a little bit. You know what I mean? And that's just reality. But man, I tell you, I definitely enjoy the jobs that I have, and I wouldn't want to do anything else.
How come Univision doesn't have you doing CONCACAF Champions League matches when it's MLS versus Liga MX?
I will in time. I've been lucky enough that Univision has allowed me to live in Denver for now, and work for them full time. So I'm allowed to travel, but I live in Colorado. Within the next year or so, I'll be doing a lot more for them. So I have a feeling they'll be flying me in to be doing more MLS, CONCACAF games and stuff like that.
Well, I hope so because, you know, I just think that, you know, if they wanted someone to come in that if basically you are a man that's in both worlds, you know, you're able, you did play in Liga MX for Lyon. You have played in MLS for the Rapids.
Yeah.
I know you had that 1 year with the Metro Stars. I know, sadly, it was injury prone. You only had one match, but still though, I mean, someone who's valuable, in my opinion, as you are, for them, I think it would be, you know, be a shame that Univision would not have you on for more CONCACAF Champions League matches, whether it be at the stadiums or in studio.
again, listen, they have a rotation of how they use the talent. Sometimes they do it from Miami. So this is the first year that I've really have dove into Univision. And again, very thankful that they're allowing me to live here and still be able to do games. So I think in the next year, you'll see me doing many more games for Univision.
Cool. That's great to hear. Outside of that, what is the future for yourself, Marcelo? What plans do you have for the future, whether it's still in broadcasting or if you do decide to not broadcast anymore? Have you thought about coaching? Have you thought maybe get a coaching license? Or do you think that time's passed?
I have my B license. I coach the Colorado Rapids DAU-14s and the assistant to the 19s. I enjoy broadcasting. I enjoy being able to see the game, analyze the game, break it down. I don't know if my time has passed as a coach yet. I mean, I'm 52. That doesn't put me over, anything as being an assistant coach somewhere. So I always leave those doors open. I'm a firm believer that how do I say this? When I retired, JP Della Camera, before I retired in my last year, JP Della Camera, who is one of the best and historical broadcasters who's done soccer since I've played, said to
yes,
me
he is.
One day, he sat me down one day just out of the blue and said, "You ever think about broadcasting?" A year before I retired, and I said, "Shut up, man. I don't want it. Just get out of here. You know what I mean?" But he brought it up to me a year before I retired.
Yeah.
And he brought it up again. He goes, "You should really think about it when you're done." You know what I mean? So I was like, "Yeah, whatever."
Mm-hmm.
And I got into it. So, as soon as I retired, HDNet was right there. They were based in Denver. Daryl Ewald, God rest his soul, who passed away, got me started in it, put me in it with Mike Cohen. And I'm a firm believer that God opened up a door for me, because he thought that was the path I was going to go. So, and this was in 2003. And in 2020, I'm still broadcasting games. I'm still doing them now. I went from just English to English and Spanish. So it's opened up a lot of other doors. So if a coaching opportunity came up, it would have to be a good opportunity, something that would intrigue me, that would spark an interest in that. If not, I'm very happy in what I'm doing in TV. I love doing the games. I love going to the stadiums and talking to the players and interviewing them and breaking down and talking to coaches of how they're setting up for games. So I'm going to stay on the path that God gave me, and that was to open up a door when I was trying to be a broadcaster. And take it that way for now and see where life takes me next.
Well, you know what? You've been fantastic as a player. You've been awesome as a broadcaster. And at the same time, let me just say you've been awesome whenever we've seen each other at Red Bull Arena, whenever it's a Univision broadcast. Marcelo, thank you very much for your time. Good luck in your future. And as always, you are one of the pioneers of this sport here in this country since 1996. And of course it all started with that 94 World Cup. Thank you again for coming on tonight. And
Anytime, please
be safe once again.
Same to you and your family.
Thank
and everybody else out there. Please be safe.
Absolutely. Have a good night. Thank you again, Marcelo.
No problem. Take care, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye. Marcelo Balboa, former U.S. men's national team, former Colorado Rapids player, current broadcaster of the Colorado Rapids on Altitude Sports and Entertainment Network, also Univision Spanish language analyst. This is why you do these types of shows. This is why you have these types of setups, to talk to a gentleman like that who has been absolutely wonderful during his broadcasting career, currently as a great player, of course, You know, this is a guy that you respect, you enjoy having conversations with, and everything going forward. You know, it's wonderful to have a man like that to come on the show to talk about his time as a player, now as a broadcaster, an analyst. And, you know, he's doing it well. He's doing it very, very well. It's just been unbelievable. I mean, we can go on and on and on and on, but obviously he has time. He has to go back to his family and everything. But still, though, it's a wonderful time to talk to him. And I'm so happy to have him on to talk about his time in MLS as, let's be honest, one of the pioneers of helping start Major League Soccer as a player, a great career, and now a fantastic broadcaster. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this will do it for tonight's show. Once again, I want to thank Marcelo Balboa for joining me tonight. And just remember, stay vigilant, stay strong, and we're going to get through this, and hopefully we'll get back into the swing of things. And we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. Have a good evening, and as always, please enjoy your football, whether it's on or not. Go and play FIFA on your Xbox, on your PlayStation. If you have the FIFA game app on your smartphone, go and play that as well. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you next time. See you next week. Bye-bye for now.